the rule of thumb, start with 100 grains of powder and increase by increments or decrease by increments of 5 grains by volume until you find a load that works. Listening to the Muzzleloaders Podcast, the show where we talk about anything and everything black powder. How's it going, guys? It's Darren and Hunter.
And Hunter.
With the Muzzleloaders.com podcast. And we are very excited to be back on another episode. We don't get to do as many podcasts as we used to because I've been in paramedic school and stuff like that, which is awesome. But unfortunately, we don't get to do as many podcasts as before. So.
Okay, someday I figure we're going to have an in-house paramedic, so
that's right.
We're going to get him back, folks. Don't you worry.
It's a worthwhile investment. So today, I was going through ideas of what to do for podcasts and stuff like that, and Hunter actually wrote a whole bunch of articles on a beginner's guide to muzzle loading. And I realized that we've never really done anything like that on our podcast, and I know for a lot of you veteran muzzleloaderers out there.
Muzzleloaderers. Is that a word?
I don't know. It is now.
It is now. Yeah, added to the vocabulary.
Exactly. A lot, even for you veterans out there, I'm sure you guys, you know, in order to grow the sport, we need to have introductory content like this, because as I've talked about with a lot of veteran muzzleloader people, there's a barrier to entry for muzzleloading. You know, it's kind of intimidating. It's not like going to buy a Remington 700 and a box of shells and you're good to go. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, you have to find what muzzleloader you need. You have to buy the right caps, the right cleaning supplies, powders, you know, balls. What kind of bullet am I going to use? And so there's a lot of things, a lot of steps required to get into it. And so we want to lay out in a 5-section podcast what the beginners need to know and do in order to have a solid grasp on how to get started in muzzle loading. And so we're going to go ahead and walk through that. This one's going to be kind of in depth and detailed. So you can skip around to things you enjoy or just this is the whole point of what I'm trying to say here is for those of you that are veterans that already know a lot of this stuff, you don't necessarily need to watch through the whole thing. But what you can do is you can send this information to new people that you know that will help, so we can help grow the sport. So you can kind of help those people along, and we'll try to provide this in as much of an organized fashion as possible, as much as our scattered brains will allow.
It's a busy season already. It's getting long now.
It is, yes. So that's our goal today. I'm going to quickly adjust Hunter's audio so it's down a little bit. Okay, I think we're good to go.
Do I sound really good now?
You sound perfect now.
Okay.
Yes, perfect. Good. I think I had it. Nate has a quieter voice, so I think I had it up for his. So.
Oh, gotcha. I was also going to add a little tidbit. You know, for the veteran guys out there, if you've got some helpful tips, feel free to put those in the comments.
Totally.
You know, we're going to cover kind of the broad basics and try to keep it, you know, as relevant to kind of the subjects we're discussing, but there's obviously nuances to everything. So if you've got some good tips and tricks, things that'll save people time that you've learned, feel free to drop those in the comments. I'm sure people will appreciate that.
Absolutely. Yes. Always welcome to comment, because as much as I wish I could be more active on the comments section these days, it's still helpful to have a lot of you. And I've seen where a lot of times people ask questions and our customers will swoop in and answer those questions. So we really appreciate the community that you guys offer on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And on the audio platform, that's not as much of a thing you can do. But still, you know, any interaction is good interaction. So let's go ahead and get started. It's going to be a long podcast as it is, so no need to continue to drag on the intro.
Should we brew a few pots of coffee for this one?
Probably. It's kind of early. It's the first thing in the morning. So the first section that we're going to cover today is muzzleloader hunting on a budget. And so for people who are getting into muzzleloading, most of the time they're going to want to try and do it as efficiently as possible. And so they don't necessarily want to just buy the most expensive stuff right off the bat, because they're kind of dipping their toes in the water. Maybe they have a season they have coming up and stuff like that. And we've done a lot of content on this individually. But I think there's a lot of really good stuff and highlights that Hunter put out. And I will also say, for this particular section, we're focusing mainly on inline muzzleloaders. I believe we're going to get into some traditional stuff later on, but here we're going to specifically focus on inlines and budget inlines, because a lot of our customer base is hunting. And so,
right. And the inline side is generally easier to get started with. Totally. And usually a little less expensive. Those guns tend not to be quite as, high on the dollars and cents side as mm-hmm. most of the traditional style guns. They're a lot of polymer stocks and stuff. It's cheaper yep. to make. So
totally.
Which is good. That benefits, people trying to save a few dollars but still want to get into it.
Yep. Absolutely. And as amazing as traditional muzzleloaders are, as much as I love them, I have two of them sitting right over here. Inline muzzleloaders are much more efficient and just straight up just better for hunting if you were strictly at it for a hunting purpose. So
yeah, they're just more reliable and more yep. accurate, typically longer range.
Totally.
Yep. So
on that note, Hunter, what when you're writing this article, what muzzleloaders would you choose as for like the someone just getting into it?
Yeah, so there's a few good options. The main two that I typically recommend if you're just looking for a budget rifle is going to be the CVA Wolf, or the Wolf V2 now is the new version of that gun, and then the Traditions Buck Stalker or Buck Stalker XT, which is their new version of that rifle. So both of them are pretty similar to their predecessors, just a few small upgrades. Both of them are good price points. They're going to be the least expensive inline muzzleloaders, and I'm pretty sure they're about the least expensive muzzleloaders on the market, mm-hmm. At least that are released by some of the larger manufacturers. So, those are going to be good, reliable guns, and they're pretty easy on the pocketbook, which, we're all feeling the strain from just the financial climate in the country right now. So, mm-hmm. I'm actually hunting with a Wolf this year too. We'll get into that in a different podcast, but so there's certainly nothing wrong with doing it. I've been doing muzzleloader stuff for a long time, and I'm still using an inexpensive rifle. It gets the job done.
Yep.
So, I think they're good rifles as well. It's not just the cost savings. You'll be able to effectively harvest game with them. Mm-hmm. And that's my main goal when I was putting this series together, is how do I get you guys the best, least expensive option that we currently offer.
Totally. Yeah. And it's not like the entry level muzzleloaders of, decades past were usually kind of throwaways.
They were bad.
That's yeah. not the case anymore. Like the Wolf V2, we've got 1-inch groups with them at 100 yards.
Mm-hmm.
They are extremely impressive. And the same with the Buckstalker XT. Buckstalker XT has an upgraded trigger. I mean, everything about these entry level muzzleloaders is not entry level. The only reason is like, they don't have some of those higher end features that you would get in like the Optima or the LRX or the Vortec or any of those other ones.
And you are paying a little bit more money for them nowadays than when, 10 years ago when you had the entry level guns in there, they're like $150, $170 mm-hmm. bucks, and they were not super great. Some of the Wolves were still pretty good and they were in that price range. Yeah, so they are a little more expensive, but I think you're getting a much better value, so you're still saving good money because they are still the cheapest option out there, but the manufacturers have really improved their baseline models, which is great.
Yep, absolutely, and it's really good for, growing muzzleloading. Mm-hmm. So now we've got that out of the way. The Wolf V2, the Traditions Buckstalker XT, those are really good models, either one. You can't really go wrong there. Now, bullets. So that's going to be the next question people are talking about. And in your article, you mentioned the Hornady Bore Driver FTX and mm-hmm. the Powerbelt ELR. And I think this was probably written before the ELDX was out.
Yeah, it was.
But both of those are great options. Bullets, there's a lot of really good options. And it kind of mm-hmm. seems like it depends on what your application is going to be. But why did you choose these ones specifically?
Yeah, so the reason I went with those two bullets is primarily because they are good, universally applicable bullets. Mm-hmm. They are not legal in every single state, but no bullet that we carry is. And so these ones cover the largest chunks of the country, and they perform very well out of both of those rifles. Mm-hmm. In particular, that Hornady Bore Driver FTX, you know, that you mentioned the 1-inch groups we were shooting with the Wolf earlier in the year. That's what we were using, was the Bore Driver FTX bullet. And I was shooting 100 grains of 777 by volume, if anybody wants to know, mm-hmm. because I usually see questions about that. Say, yep. Hey, you mentioned yeah. bullets and stuff. You forget to tell us what charges you're using. So yep. that's what we were doing. And I think we were just using just a Federal 209A primer. Mm-hmm. So anyway, for the people who are curious about that. But is back to the bullets. So these bullets are good for hunting just about any game. Mm-hmm. They will work for elk or deer, antelope, black bear. You could even use them for moose. You could use them for caribou. There's lots of applications. They're good. They're just a good, you know, they're not overly heavy, but they're not light. You know, mm-hmm. they're both kind of in that right around that 300 grain mark. I think the Bore Driver's 290, and then the ELDX, depending on what caliber you're going with, you're still sitting right around 300 typically.
Yep.
So they will work for pretty much whatever you want to hunt. That's a big game animal, of course. And yeah, they perform well out of both these rifles. So that's mm-hmm. the main reason. We've done a lot of testing. You've done a lot of testing with those. That's yeah. primarily what I was looking at when I was going through that. And yeah, I think the other side of it is too, you can use a Sabo. They perform really well. Mm-hmm. But if you're a beginner and you aren't aware of the potential hazards with using Sabos, that can cause you some heartache down the road.
Yeah.
So the main issue with Sabos is they just rub a lot of plastic off as they're going mm-hmm. through the rifling. And so if you do not get them good and clean after every outing, then over time your bore gets tighter and tighter and it's really hard to load your gun.
Yep.
And eventually, you know, you kind of ruin the barrel. So, you know, that was the other side of it. I was looking at, okay, what are bullets that are not going to cause problems for people? You know, so if they're not right on top of the maintenance, because there's a little bit of a learning curve with that, you know, they're still going to be up and running here in a couple years from now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's, like, we could talk about bullets all day. And in fact, we did, because we had a whole bullet podcast.
You should go watch it.
Yeah, just recently. So
what
plug. If you want more information on bullets, more in depth, then, you know, listen to our bullet podcast, which will probably be the podcast right before this one. So we talk, I think Nate and I talked for like a half an hour on various different kinds of bullets for various different kinds of applications. So we're not going to, this is not the podcast to talk about right. that.
Well, and we got a lot of videos we've been putting out yep. as well
yes.
with bullet reviews. So check those out too.
Yeah. We've been putting out a lot of bullet stuff this year. So, you shouldn't have any trouble finding it. You just go to our YouTube page and look for that. So, next up, powders. So powders are another one. There's different kinds of powders. There's pelletized powder. There's, you know, all that kind of stuff. And we'll get more into that later on. But for the beginning muzzleloader section of this, you chose 777 and IMR White Hots. And so walk us through like the logic behind those two choices.
Yeah. So my thought process on that, and there's other options you can use, but I was primarily looking at efficiency, ease of use, and price point. Mm-hmm. So again, this is all part of that getting started under, you know, on a good budget, you know, trying to keep it, you know, under $1,000 kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And so 777 is less expensive than some of the other powders out there, but still performs really well. Mm-hmm. So again, I didn't want to put recommendations out there that were just the cheapest. I wanted the cheapest, good performing option.
Efficiency.
That's right. You want to get the best bang for your buck, right? So that's kind of, that was the idea when I was putting this together. So IMR White Hots are great if you want to start with pelletized powder. And a lot of people recommend doing that. It's less equipment to get started with, so that saves mm-hmm. you money there. And it's easy to use. They're pre-measured charges, so you can just drop one, two, or three of them down the barrel of either one of the rifles we've talked about and just put your bullet right on top of that and it's ready to go. I like to use the loose powder, and so I wanted to give a loose powder option for people as well, and I think 777 is kind of the sweet spot. It's mm-hmm. readily available, which has been a big problem for some of the other powders over the last several years now, but 777's always been there. 2FG is what I recommend using in the inline guns. And then, you know, it's a consistent powder. It's not going to give you the highest velocities, but it gives you really good consistency and accuracy.
Yep.
And so it's going to be easier to get dialed in quicker, mm-hmm. which is going to make your experience more enjoyable, you know, at totally. The startup.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that's nice for beginners with loose powder is you don't have to worry about crushing it, because you know, a lot of times when you're first starting out,
or when you're not, because I still crush them all the time. I'm horrible at pellet shooting.
Totally, and it's understandable, because you want to make sure in muzzleloading that you are packed down all the way, because if there's any sort of gap there, it can be hazardous. So you want to make sure you're packed down. So with pellets, you're kind of riding that line to where it's packed down, but you're also not crushing the pellets, which can be kind of just another thing you have to think about. So, you know, pellets are really nice if you're starting out. If you are concerned about that, go with loose powder. Either one's good. Loose powder is going to take more startup gear. And, you know, you obviously have to measure everything out. But if you get like the little powder tubes, you can measure out 20 of them before you even go to the range. Mm-hmm. And then you're just so much faster going. So either option is good. There's pros and cons to both. Just kind of, you know, take this information and do with it what you will, whatever seems to fit your specific needs and desires. So next up, we have primers. So, Hunter, there's the Shadi primers, or
is that how you pronounce that?
I don't know.
I really have no idea.
I have no idea. I was told, I believe I can't remember who told me, but somebody told me it was Shadi. But Cheddite and Shadi, I've heard them both ways. So if you guys know the correct pronunciation, let me know in the comments below so I can stop wondering.
Don't just spell it out, though.
Yeah.
They got to put in brackets the pronunciation. It's pronounced, and then spell it exactly the same.
Exactly. Oh, man. So those ones are kind of like, they kind of burst onto the scene here through just the you know, COVID times when other primers were not available, and they've performed really well. So those are on here.
Well, okay, not all of them. So you got to be careful with that. There's a specific one that they make. They make several primers.
Well, enlighten me, because we have the Cheddite, we have CCI 209M and Federal 209A. So talk about these choices here.
Right. So I'm just gonna say Cheddite because that's how I've always said it. And if that's the redneck pronunciation, you'll have to forgive me. So this is a muzzleloading show.
That's right.
We're all rednecks. Anyway, so the Cheddite primers, they make a variety of different primers for different applications, like all these other brands do. Mm-hmm. The ones that we recommend using are the Clarinox CX2000 209 primers that they have.
Clarinox.
Yeah, yeah. They're a mouthful of a name, but those are the ones you want. We have them on our website, so if you want to look that up so you know which one to get if you're shopping locally, that's the only one that we carry, so you can see which one. You know, you can also buy them on the website if you can't find them. But those, the CCI 209Ms, which everybody knows, you guys are all familiar with those most likely.
The gold standard.
The gold standard and Federal 209A. You know, those two are kind of they've been the golden boys for a long time in the muzzleloading world. Yeah. They work with everything. The Cheddites that we carry also work with everything. So that's why I put them on there. They're just the highest quality 209 primers that will work. Doesn't matter what you're shooting. If you're shooting pellets, loose powder, Blackhorn 209, you know, whatever you want to use, they will properly ignite it and give you good, consistent ignition. So those are the three I recommend sticking with.
Absolutely. I can't disagree with you. It's good choices. So next up, we have some other accessory type stuff on here. So we have speed loaders. We have range rod. And basically, this is kind of one of the things, if somebody's going to call into like customer service, these are a lot of the times the questions that they're going to have is, you know I want this muzzleloader. I know I want to shoot this other stuff, but what do I need to accomplish this task? And so let's go ahead and walk through some of these things. I didn't put like an exhaustive list on here. Fortunately, I have the article pulled up.
Well, that's handy.
Yes, because basically you have cleaning and loading supplies, and then yeah, that's like
pretty
much
it.
Yeah, cleaning and loading supplies. And they're kind of two separate entities. You have your cleaning stuff, your loading stuff, and you're going to need to have all of it in order to make sure your muzzleloading experience is a success. So,
yeah, so one of the things I have done recently is put together kind of an all-in-one kit option. So it's got a rifle with a scope on it and then a bunch of different accessories and shooting supplies. And you can use that kind of as a template if you want to build out your own thing. And I understand, you know, that's not going to be universally applicable for every hunting scenario. So, you know, it works great for some people. I know we've sold a number of them. If you want to look that up, the part number is MZ1776. And
very patriotic part number.
That's right. Nate was just dying to have something in our system that had that part number. So I thought, why not use that for this? So anyway, Yeah, so that's a good option. You can look at that. That's going to show you kind of everything you need. Another good thing that you can do, if you're just getting started, there's some good kits. You know, CVA makes a really good deluxe cleaning kit that's got everything, including, it's even got a range rod and loading jags and stuff. So what's great about that kit, and I recommended that to a lot of people over the years when I was working in customer service who are just getting started, because it's got really everything that you'll need to clean and load and maintain your gun short of the actual bullets and powder and primers. So that's a good one to look at as well. If you're buying a gun and you're like, hey, I don't know what I need and I don't have anything, if you get that, that's a great deal if you don't have anything. If you've already got a bunch of stuff, then it's probably going to have a lot of redundancies. But for the beginner, that's really what it's tailored for. So that's a really good option. And I was also going to say, you know, with this all-in-one kit, you know, feel free to leave us some feedback on that. If you like that sort of thing and you want us to offer some more options as far as guns, different accessories, components, and things like that, we can definitely do that. And that's part of my new job here. So feel free to let me know. Send us emails to our customer service team. Those guys forward those kinds of messages and stuff to me so I can see what people are looking for. We're looking to serve you guys. And so if you've got some ideas as to what you would like to see, you know, on the site, definitely let us know.
Totally. Yeah. And I actually want to go through that kit right now.
Okay.
Because we've been getting a lot of, like, you know, we don't want to ever put off the thing like we're just, this is one big sales pitch of a podcast, you know. Because our whole goal is not to do that. You know, obviously, we're a business. We want to stay in business. Yeah. But our goal is to grow the sport of muzzleloading because we're all passionate about it. And so, basically, I'll just go through and list off all the stuff that's in this kit. So if you wanted to plug and play or whatever, you have that information. The part number is MZ1776, like Hunter said. So for $550, you get a CVA Wolf V2 scope combo. You have two boxes of IMR White Hots, a box of 2-9 shot shell primers, two boxes of Hornady Bore Driver FTXs, one bottle of muzzleloader cleaning solvent, one breech plug anti-seize compound, one jar of rust prevent patches, one jar of part soaker, 200 count cotton cleaning patches, those are just dry, one barrel snake, one ramrod accessory pack, one speed loader, one capper tool, one range rod, one bullet starter, and one possibles bag. So that gives you a little bit of a loose idea of kind of, you know, everything you're going to need going through like a budget type scenario. So,
And what's the price on that? I set it pretty low. What's the price on that kit?
It's $550.
$550.
So for $550 bucks, you get everything you need.
Yeah. So, and that gives you an idea of what you can do it for as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're looking, you know, you can probably realistically be between $500 and $600, you know, to get a good setup.
Yep.
And get out into the field. So that's a good ballpark number for you to work with as well.
Totally. The other thing that we have, so basically somebody's listening to this from our beloved state of Oregon and is like, but Hunter and Darren, that's none of that's going to work for me. So what do we say for those people?
We say, not to worry. We have you covered.
We have you covered. that we're actually, just after Hunter and I get done here, we're going to record another podcast, which you guys won't get to hear for like another month, about hunting season. So,
yeah, that'll be fun.
It will
be fun. It'll be just about time for that hunt by the time that podcast comes out, probably.
Seriously, yeah.
So, we all got tags this year. It'll be fun.
I know. This is like the first time we've all got, like, it kind of is a little bit of like a, oh my goodness moment, because we got to get all this stuff together so we can all hunt and all our hunting seasons are at the same time. Yeah. So
if we're all gone when you know, in November for some random reason, you can't get a hold of us, we're probably hunting.
Yeah, probably so.
We'll have somebody here for you.
Yeah, we'll make sure there's somebody around. So
Northwest guys.
Yep, Northwest guys.
Yeah, so... Yeah, that's the tricky thing. So Idaho and Oregon obviously have different rules than pretty much everybody else. And then you've got Montana, which is an outlier as well. So you can use an inline rifle in Oregon and in Idaho. And so I typically recommend going with the Northwest variations of the same rifles we've already discussed. So CVA Wolf, Traditions Buckstalker, good entry-level guns. Both companies make a good Northwest ignition system. A variation of that with open sights installed on the gun. So you're up and running, you know, before or excuse me, you're up and running just out of the box with the rifle. You don't have to buy parts to get it set up to hunt in those states. One thing to keep in mind with these guns, so the CVAs can use a variety of musket caps. The traditions are really picky. They really only like the RWS musket caps. So if you're going to use a traditions gun, make sure you can get RWS musket caps. That would be my one kind of cautionary tale, if you will, with that. But otherwise, the equipment's very similar. Your bullet choice is going to have to be a little different, and you're going to have to go with loose powder.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon and Idaho have quite a bit different rules on the bullet side of things. So for Oregon guys, we typically recommend going with the Thor bullets. Those work really nicely in Oregon, and they're legal. Go with the hollow point variation. You can't use a ballistic tip because it's plastic, so no plastic on your bullets in Oregon. For Idaho guys, you got to use all lead. So if you're going to shoot an inline, you know, the best one we carry is that Power Belt Pure Lead.
Mm.
You can also use, there are other brands out there that we don't carry right now that we're looking into bringing on. I know No Excuses is actually, I think they're an Idaho-based company, and they make all lead projectiles. They're kind of more of a maxi ball style.
Interesting.
Bullet that you can use there. I've heard good feedback from customers on those. Thompson Center Maxi Ball and Maxi Hunter bullets are still made. I don't know who's making them because Thompson Center's not in business, but they're still being rolled out. So somebody's making them.
Making them before.
I don't know who was making them. Somebody's making them. They're still branded Thompson Center. The Maxi Hunter, Maxi Ball, those are all options for you.
Yep.
Those are probably going to perform better, more of a traditional style gun than in an inline. Montana guys, I know this is a lot of information, kind of rapid fire here. We just have a lot to cover. So,
well, also for specifically Northwest, podcast was recorded before the podcast I'm going to reference was recorded before the Montana thing. But we have a whole podcast dedicated to Northwest legal stuff. So, go check that out, and we talk about that stuff more in depth. The Montana side of things, we haven't done anything specifically for that. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, we'll give you at least a primer, and then we can go from there too. So the Montana side of things, you're really locked into a traditional style gun for their muzzleloader season. You can use other kinds of muzzleloaders in other seasons if you want to for the rifle seasons, but for their muzzleloader season, it's what they call a heritage season. And so that means it is traditionals only. So that's flintlock or sidelock percussion ignition systems. Yep. I think you can use a wheel lock too if you're feeling really courageous. No match locks though. That's a fire hazard apparently, so you can't use that one.
Really?
Well, they're always smoldering.
Yeah.
Because they've got the match, right? The cord.
A fire hazard in December though? It's strange. Strange.
Hey, ask the game commissioners in Montana. I
demand an explanation.
I'm just the messenger. Don't shoot the messenger. Anyway. Maybe it's a reliability thing, too. I don't know.
Could be. Who knows?
Because those probably don't work great in the wintertime.
Yeah.
They didn't work great anyway, but, you know, that's why they invented other versions of the gun.
This is terrible. We need to do something better.
Hey, they were working with what they had.
Yep, totally.
Anyway, so back on target. So the traditional season there, so you're going to be using, you got to use a lead projectile, so that's going to be a round ball or like a mini ball style bullet. Loose powder, obviously, you know, if you're using a flintlock ignition, you know, you know how that works. It's flint, 4F powder, if you're using the percussion, number 11 percussion cap, or a musket cap. So has to be sidelock, has to be traditional. If you are getting started in the Montana season and you have no idea where to start, just call us for now. I will. I'm working on putting a in-depth article together for you guys, but there's a lot to go over.
Yeah.
It's going to take some time to get that rolled out. So for now, I would strongly encourage you just to call in and our guys can get you lined out. There's a lot of different options and equipment and stuff you'll need. So definitely give us a call on that one.
Yep. Absolutely. So, hey, we made it through one section.
All right.
Close the book. We're done with the budget. Beginner's guide to budget muzzleloading and stuff like that. So now it's on to part number two, which is shooting, cleaning, and troubleshooting. So these are some of the things that we get a lot of calls about in customer service, because troubleshooting muzzleloaders, there's a lot more going on than, you know, with centerfire. With centerfire, it's like, well, just try different ammo. Maybe you need to clean. Maybe have some copper buildup or something. With muzzleloaders, it could be any number of things. So let's go ahead and get started. The way this article is lined up is it's sort of like an A to Z, like what you need to do when you first get your muzzleloader all the way on through to like shooting it and cleaning it and all that kind of stuff. So first thing that we have outlined here is cleaning out all the factory grease. So, Hunter, why don't you go into depth and talk about some of the questions we get there?
Sure. And just as a side note, too, you can see all these articles we're talking about. They're on our website. And what section are they under?
They're under the... Hold on. So, if you basically, if you go to our website, they're in the top there. You'll see articles and resources. And then if you go to testing and info, that is where these articles live. Okay. So,
and there's a 5-part series. They all have a very similar looking graphic.
Yep.
There's different pictures, but the wording's all kind of the same. It says part 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Yep.
And there's links in all the articles to go to the other ones. Mm-hmm. So you can check all that stuff out.
Totally. If you find one, you can find them all.
That's right. So I've got them all linked to each other. So anyway, so onto the content of this article. So the factory grease thing. So one thing that we get a lot is when people get their gun, they're often concerned that the gun has been used in some way or that, you know, it's rusty or whatnot. And what's going on there is there's a bunch of factory grease that gets stuffed in the barrels of these things. Mm-hmm. Because to give you guys a little backstory on the process, so these guns are all manufactured in Europe. They are then put on a ship and boated over to the United States, where they then sit in customs for a while before they get moved off. So they spend a lot of time around salt water. So they've mm-hmm. got to be greased up to the nines to make sure that they're not going to arrive rusty.
Yep.
And the grease they use, and hey, if anybody from CVA is watching this, use a different color grease. The grease they use is kind of a reddish orange color. I'm not sure why, because that's what causes the confusion. So, but anyway, so rest assured, your gun is not rusty. It's not been fired. There may be some proof testing they've done. They proof fire the barrels at the factory.
Mm-hmm.
They should clean those all out, you know, before you get it, and then they'll coat that then with grease.
Yep.
Sometimes there's a little residue left from that, so don't be alarmed. That's very normal. That's just kind of part of the process to make sure your gun is safe from the factory. That's why they do that.
Yep.
And then as far as what you need to do with it when you receive the gun, you want to get all that out of the barrel. If you leave that in there and then you go to shoot, you're going to have a mess on your hands, and mm-hmm. you're going to really be kicking yourself because it doesn't shoot out.
Yeah.
It's not like a center fire gun where you can, you know, I mean, with one of the new rifles I got, I just went and shot it and, you know, shot it out and then cleaned the barrel and it was good.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how it works with muzzle loaders. The greases they use are oil-based because obviously oil and water don't get along, mm-hmm. and so it keeps the water off your barrel. Well, oil doesn't get along with black powder either, and so it makes a big sludgy mess in the bore, and so you got to get all that out of there before you start, and it'll take a little bit of time sometimes. Some of mm-hmm. them have more grease than others, so be patient. You can use a regular degreasing cleaner, you know, so the petroleum-based cleaning product that'll cut through that stuff to get it out initially, and mm-hmm. then once you're done with that, you're going to want to take a muzzleloader cleaner that's black powder friendly and clean that out.
Yep.
Because you don't want any petroleum-based stuff in the barrel when you get started. The only exception to that is if you're shooting Blackhorn.
Mm-hmm.
You guys can get away with that, but everybody else, you've got to have, you want to use a non-petroleum-based cleaner. So get that all done. Get your gun shiny, bright, and ready to go, and then head out to the range. You don't want to start with all that stuff in your gun.
Totally. Yeah, that's good advice. And, you know, yeah, you even mentioned it in the article here, but I would just say if you're shooting a muzzleloader, even if you are shooting black powder, just go with water-based solvents like, you know, the Thor solvent or whatever, just because if you have that, it's going to work with everything. You don't even have to think about, like, oh, which one is this and which one am I doing? So, yeah, that's good stuff. So the next step is cleaning. So there's a whole bunch of steps to cleaning. I don't really necessarily want to go through them all because
I think we've put videos out on that stuff.
We have. Yeah. So basically if you go to this article, we have a video that says how to clean a we have how to clean a inline muzzleloader. We have a how to clean a traditional muzzleloader. And we also in this article have step-by-step instructions on how to do it, but it's kind of just like an arduous process. So it's like, if you just go to the article, you're going to be able to reference it. You're not even going to really use this podcast to help you clean your muzzleloader anyways. So just go to the article and check out that kind of stuff. The next thing is load development. And we get a lot of phone calls about this because, you know, people will be struggling with accuracy or whatever. And that can be any number of things. But we do have, like, in this article, Hunter outlined a good way to start load development here. So I've outlined on my notes, start at 100 grains by volume and reduce by 5 grain increments until your groups are satisfactory. And that can, you know, vary by depending on, you know, what you're trying to do. That's a really good way to start. 100 grains by volume is usually, no matter what powder you're using, it's going to be a good, accurate starting place. And it allows you a little wiggle room so you can go up or down from there some and find a charge that works for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you're looking to shoot higher charges as well, if you're wanting to maximize your range capacity and you're hunting in a state that allows a scope, you know, you can go up in increments of five as well. Just know that, generally speaking, lower charges tend to group tighter.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that doesn't mean you can't use a magnum charge. You're just going to need to understand what you can reasonably expect from that.
Totally.
You know, so you know, if you're shooting, trying to shoot 200 to 300 yards and you're using 150 grains of powder by volume, then, you know, you might be, the best you can do maybe is a two inch group,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's like, okay, well, maybe that's not acceptable for the animal I'm hunting. If you're hunting black tail deer, that might not work for you. You know, if you're hunting moose or elk, you're good. Mm-hmm. Right. So just understand, you know, you're going to have to kind of tailor that for your application. And that's also part of why I recommend loose powder as well. You have a lot more flexibility there.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think one of the things I've noticed with that too is that there's a lot of other factors that can play into what charge you want to start with, because twist rate can factor into it. Bullet can factor into it. You know, sometimes those higher ballistic coefficient bullets like the ELR, ELDX, like a little bit faster velocity. Sometimes especially if you're using a 1 in 28 twist with those high BC bullets, that can factor into it.
You're spitting out a lot of information.
That's a lot
Remember,
of information.
This is a beginner's guide here.
Exactly. And so that's why I'm just saying that for you guys that are maybe a little bit ambitious and want to get after it. For 99% of people, the rule of thumb, start with 100 grains of powder and increase by increments or decrease by increments of 5 grains by volume until you find a load that works. So that's the rule of thumb. That is the golden standard that we always recommend. So, another one. So next up, we have how to load. That's another one, kind of like cleaning, sort of like just an arduous process. There's a video on the article. There's step-by-step instructions on how to load. So just reference that. It's going to be much easier. The same with sighting in. Sighting in a muzzleloader is very similar to sighting in a centerfire. But still, if you're going to, you know, if you want step-by-step instructions, check out the article. There's step-by-step instructions in there. Hunter did an excellent job with just extremely specific and detailed information here. We also, from last year, I went on a bear hunt and I used the LRX and I made a whole load development video, and we even have a whole load development podcast, I think, too. So tons of content on that already. So feel free to check any of that stuff out. What's next here?
A field application is what you've got noted here.
Field application. Don't remember what I was. I must have been just doing something crazy when I put that in there. So we're just gonna move on. next up,
there is no application in the field. This is all for range use only. Darren Bynum.
Basically, if your field application is, get it right so you don't mess it up in the field.
Get it right at the range and then do the same thing in the field. There you go.
We're
gonna have to fire you and get a new coach.
I remember. Okay, so
you better grab your
field application was just the beginning point. The rest of it's on the next page.
There we go.
So your field application. So these are things that you're gonna want to practice at the range. So practice your quick reloads. And because you're gonna want to. There's a lot of times where, like last year, I took a shot and I was using a flintlock, so it's pretty tough to reload a flintlock super quickly. But I shot at a doe, I missed. If you want to hear more about that, listen to the hunting recap podcast. And the doe just kind of sat there. And so I'm like trying to hide behind a little rock and I'm like trying to reload quickly.
Wish I had that on video.
I wish I did too. So that's just one example of a lot of times when you're hunting, you do have an opportunity for a second shot. And so you want to have, you know, you want to be able to reload as efficiently as possible. You don't want to rush it, because when you rush it, bad things happen. I know that firsthand as well. But you want to make sure that you are loading as efficiently and quickly as you can safely. The next thing, Hunter, so can I leave a charge in overnight? What is the answer to that question?
Well, yeah. I mean, technically, you sure can. But, you know, is it wise? So that would be the question I would ask. So, yeah, it's possible. but it's maybe not the best idea. So, you know, actually, I was just watching Ethan Yeazel did a whole thing on that on I Love Muzzleloading. So you guys should check that out. He does some great content over there.
Totally.
So he left a bunch of charges in overnight and they still worked fine.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you can do it. The two things that I just caution people with is I don't generally recommend it. And the reason why is because there's one that's a major safety hazard. If you forget you've loaded your gun the day before, you can double load your gun and you're going to have a problem. And it's super, you know, I know we all think that I would never do that, but you get out in hunting camp with your buddies and you're having a great time in the morning and drinking coffee and BSing about the day before, you know, and you're loading up your gun and you're not paying attention to my ramrod sticking out 3 or 4 inches further than it normally does because you're visiting.
Yep.
You know, I've heard countless stories of that and it could end really bad.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, people have died from stuff like that. So I don't generally recommend doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the main reason. The other side of it is there's two kind of practical issues you can run into as far as just the performance of the gun. If you are out camping and you get a heavy dew and that powder gets moisture contaminated, it may not go off or may not perform like you expect it to. And that can be a huge bummer if you miss a deer or an elk or whatever you're shooting at.
Yeah.
And it can hurt your gun, especially if you're using real black powder. That stuff's highly corrosive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it'll pit your rifle if you leave stuff like that in there over, you know, long periods of time. So
totally.
I don't recommend doing it. That's my personal preference. I love you guys and I don't want anybody getting hurt. And so I would strongly encourage you to discharge or remove the charge from your gun at the end of each hunting day, but that is up to your discretion at the end of the day.
Yep. Yeah. I also encourage you all to do that. I will say that I usually don't personally, and I will just share my experience with this. I always recommend because it's a risk that I'm willing to take, but I would not recommend that risk to anybody else. Because one, it is unsafe. Two, you would hate to have like an animal that you've spent the whole season hunting right in front of you. And then your gun doesn't go off because you had, you know, dew that accumulated in there. And so, I have hunted and I've never personally had a problem with it, but, I would totally recommend, you know, doing that just for all the reasons we've already listed out.
Yep. Use your discretion.
Yep. Use your discretion. Be smart.
And just pay close attention to what you're doing.
Yep.
You know, I mean, at the end of the day, if you decide to leave the charge in there, just make sure you're, you know, check that gun in the morning. You know, just make a habit of putting your ramrod down the barrel.
Totally.
You know, before doing anything.
Yep.
If you do that as part of your process, you're going, I've already got this loaded if you forgot, you know, and then you're good to go. Head on out. You're going to be safe. It's going to be fun. You know, you're going to have a good time and come home.
Totally.
So just, I would say that whatever you decide to do, just make sure to, at the beginning of every day, just put your ramrod down the barrel because that is just a good part of your process that will, that's a good indicator, easy to do, takes very little time. And then you're not going to run that risk nearly as high.
Yep. And I will say that I do that because sometimes I have had it where like something like a bullet will start to work free.
Mm-hmm.
And so just to, you know, make sure everything's packed down good too, again. So, that's good advice from Hunter. So next up we have troubleshooting and then we're done with this little section here. So troubleshooting is, accuracy and failure to ignite are kind of the two main things we have to, you know, we troubleshoot the most. Accuracy, we can start there. Hunter's probably gonna have a lot of information on this more than I will because I haven't been in customer service for quite some time now. But accuracy can come, I mean, it can be you're using the wrong primer powder combination. It can be, you know, you haven't cleaned enough. It can be a whole laundry list of things. So Hunter, when you're walking somebody through like an accuracy troubleshooting call, what is the process you take them through?
Well, the first thing I will ask is, you know, what sort of optic system they're using and just make sure everything's tight. I don't know how many times I have spent hours helping somebody trying to do, I mean, and they'll be at the range too. And we encourage that, you know, hey, if you're at the range and you're having a problem and you've got cell service, give us a call. We'll walk you through it. You know, and I've had several phone calls over the years where we were trying all this different stuff, and then, you know, the scope was loose. So this is just kind of from my own experience, and, you know, save yourself the time that I lost learning this. So yeah, check your scope or check your sights. If anything's moving, tighten it down. That's likely your problem.
Yep.
And then don't change a thing. Do exactly what you were doing after you've tightened everything back up. Muzzleloaders have weird recoil. It goes through the barrel differently than a centerfire rifle does, and so it knocks stuff loose. There's more recoil kind of tends to go up into the mount or into the top of the barrel. I don't know all the science behind it, but I can tell you the practical side of it is it tends to knock stuff loose easier. Yep. And so, you know, a lot of people like to Loctite stuff down. I don't personally. I just torque stuff down pretty tight. But if that's not holding, then, you know, put some Loctite on those screws, whatever you need to do. Make sure everything's stable there first. Once you've got that done, we can move on.
So real quick on that note, Nate Savage and I spent hours at the range dealing with this same thing not 2 weeks ago, because we were shooting a muzzleloader, and it was rings we'd never used, and on a gun we'd never shot, and so we just kind of put everything on there the way we normally would, and it would work just fine. But we were just having horrendous accuracy. Like, what is the deal here? And it took us long to figure out, like, man, the scope is literally sliding forward. So we rechanged the rings, but the good, you know, the rings we knew worked good, put those on there, and it was still sliding forward. So with that particular muzzleloader, we had to torque it down more than we normally would. So just keep in mind that, like, general torque specs may not necessarily apply to muzzleloading. You might have to go a little tighter to make sure everything locks down there. So
Well, and on that note too, be advised that your scope manufacturer is going to have a maximum torque rating on the tube that they want you to put on there. And if you've reached that and it's still moving, it's time to try something different. And there's a lot of different tricks you can do with the rings themselves. You can, you know, you can kind of add some grit to them. You can do different things to the rings so they bite into that scope better. So, you know, just don't get discouraged and throw in the towel because you can't get it dialed in. There's a lot of things you can do. And if you need help with that, you know, we're happy to help you. So once you've got that part established, okay, everything's firm, scope's working good, or my sights are locked in, we're good, nothing's moving there. Still can't get accuracy going. So there's a few things that you'll want to look at. I always ask what rifle you're using and what bullet, powder, and primer combination you're using. So if you talk to me, and probably anybody else in our CS department, they're going to do the same thing. You know, and they're going to ask you for that information. And what's going to happen at that point is we're then analyzing, okay, because we've shot pretty much all these guns with just about every bullet out there that we can get our hands on. And so we know, generally speaking, what's working well and what's not. And so we're going to take that knowledge. We're going to go, okay, well, hey, that bullet's not the best bullet for that rifle. So that could be part of the problem. We're also going to ask about your process, about your cleaning process, about your loading process. So those are all things that you'll want to make sure to document, pay close attention to, because the more of that information you can give us, the better we can help you get dialed in. So make notes of that stuff if you have to. If you've got good mental notes of everything, awesome. Just clearly convey that information if you call in. But basically, you're going to want to look at, okay, is the powder charge getting compacted the same way every time? Are the primers a good option for what kind of powder you are using, how much powder you're using? There's a lot that goes into it. You know, we could probably spend another hour just talking about that, so we won't get into all the details. But generally speaking, there's a few quick tips that I can recommend, and that would be check your primer. If you're using a primer that is not good for the powder you're using, you're going to have problems. So, you know, if you're using, you know, a non-magnum primer and you're trying to shoot Blackhorn powder, you're going to have a problem. You know, if you're using a primer that's rated for, really more rated for centerfire rifle applications and isn't ideally suited for black powder, you may have a problem. Sometimes, you know, it's the gun itself. Maybe the breech plug's plugged up. There's a lot of different things that can go into that You know, we're just going to walk through all that. We're going to look at all those things step by step, and we're going to just knock things off and start checking things off and go, okay, that's solid, that's good. Oh, hey, this is a red flag. Let's change this variable up. And then we're going to send you back to the range to try it again with that one variable change. So it can take a little bit of time if you're way off track, because we can only, you know, we've got to isolate one problematic variable at a time. If we try to take too many things at once, we won't know what the problem was. And usually it's just one thing. Sometimes it's a couple, but 99% of the time there's one part of the process that is off, and you know, then we can get you back up and running. So that's kind of the overview.
Yep.
For accuracy stuff. Failure to ignite kind of lumps under that. Again, most of that is going to be adequate primer for the powder, or your fire channel is blocked up. Mm-hmm. That's usually the main issues.
Yep, totally. And
or your powder's gotten wet somehow. That doesn't happen that often, though, unless you're just leaving your powder outside.
I will say it did happen to Chance and I at the rendezvous this past weekend.
Well, you guys were camping, so that makes sense.
Because it was also not that specifically. It was because we cleaned off the nipple, and some of the solvent had gone down the nipple and gotten his load wet.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to, it was a whole ordeal. We had to get the whole thing fixed. So, but if you guys want, again, with most of this stuff that we're talking about, this is a broad overview, and we have content going more in depth. We actually teamed up with Burris here. I guess it was year and a half ago now. And we made a troubleshooting common muzzleloader problems video. So, you can go to our YouTube channel, and we made a whole video on this topic specifically. So, and also you're always welcome to give us a call, as with all these things. So,
Yep. I would just say, be advised. We are back into the swing of the busy season, as we call it around here. So, you know, really nowadays that's running kind of August 1st through the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And we are a little short staffed right now. So I do apologize if it's taking longer to get responses. I would just ask that you be patient and extra gracious with us as we try to get back to you as quickly as we can. We are working on getting some more guys in here. And if you're watching this and you want an awesome job, send us an email, because we want you. So, yeah.
We only want awesome people, so only awesome people send us emails.
Only awesome people watch our show,
Darren.
That's
true.
Wow.
It's true.
Wow. I can't believe you'd say that. Anyway, but yeah, if you guys, you know, do be advised, we're only one location out here in La Grande, Oregon, but if you want to live in an awesome place in kind of the middle of nowhere and work with a bunch of awesome dudes who love Jesus, then we are a good place for you to look at.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. All right, so I think we can kind of close the book on section number two now. We've talked about troubleshooting. So let's go ahead and move on to section three. And the next, so we have three more sections, three, four, and five, and they are less extensive than the first two we've gone through. So we've kind of gone through a lot of the information so far. These other three, they're just going to be a little bit more supplemental. So in number three, we're talking about powder. So this is going to be all about powder. And so let's talk about how you, the different classifications of powder. So Hunter, you chose, and I guess you didn't choose.
Well, I just kind of went through everything.
This is the reality of the situation. So there's true black powder or so you basically sort powders through this, through these means. So you have true black powder or substitute. You have granulation size, and you have loose and pelletized powder. So, Hunter, let's go ahead and walk through these different classifications here.
Yeah, so essentially, you know, true black powder, that's going to be the traditional real black powder. That's
Go-X,
that's a real Class A explosive black powder. Yeah, Go-X, Swiss, Schutzen, I think, makes it.
Yep.
There's quite a few people making it. And that's the really, that's the really good stuff, especially if you're a traditional shooter. Traditional guns just do so much better with it. It's a lot more reactive. Is the main reason why. It's a much easier igniting powder than the substitutes are. The downside to black powder is it's just really corrosive and really dirty. And so that's why substitutes were invented. And substitutes are not true black powder, but they fall under that category because they produce the same types of pressures.
Yep.
So they're safe to use in your black powder rifles, but they are not black powder. So they're much easier on your gun. They're a lot cleaner, and it just generally makes the process more efficient and keeps your gun in better shape.
Yep.
So that's kind of the two groups you've got. There is really nothing else. Yeah, so when it comes to black powder.
there, I will say, like, a lot of the rendezvous I've been to, a lot of them, I use black powder substitute at rendezvous. However, a lot of the people that I talk to there use true black powder because mm-hmm. of it. It's easier to ignite. So if you're using, you know, something like a flintlock or something, you know, if you're using a number 11 cap or something, true black powder may be the way to go because it does ignite much easier. You might have fewer, you know, misfire issues. So just keep that in mind. Black powder, but I personally have not had very many issues with black powder substitute and number 11 caps. My muzzleloader this last weekend at the rendezvous went off very reliably, and I didn't have any problems with it. So just keep that in mind. That's something a lot of people like to do that I don't do, but it is an opinion that's out there.
Yeah, and I would just say, and I think I mentioned it in that article as well, is if you're shooting a flintlock, I would strongly encourage you to stick with real black powder. You're just going to have to be on top of the cleaning. Just know that's part of the process. But the ignition is just so much faster if you're using 4F black powder and a 3F black powder charge in the barrel. You're not, you know, flintlocks are already slightly delayed anyway, just because of the mechanism. And so you want to shorten that time as much as possible. Even though when you're watching us do it on YouTube and it doesn't seem like it's much of a delay or anything, when you're trying to actually shoot and maintain accuracy, it's quite difficult.
Yeah.
The longer every millisecond that it takes, you know, for the ignition, you know, to go from the time you've pulled the trigger, it just makes it that much more difficult to actually keep the gun where you want it.
Yes.
Because we're all so used to shooting, it go click, bang, you know, it's, yep. Well, not even that. It's just you pull the trigger and it goes off.
Yeah.
You know, if you're shooting inlines or regular firearms, you know, your center fire stuff, you know, there's no delay, at least none that you can perceive. But with flintlocks, sometimes if you're using a substitute, you're going to get a click, bang, you know, and yep. It's like a half second delay on that. And, you know, that half second makes it really, really hard to keep it on target.
Totally.
So I recommend that. That's actually some advice that was given to me, by one of the guys from the rendezvous group we ran into at the range. And I was having issues with one of the flintlocks I was shooting, and he's, oh no, you just got to use real black powder. And yep. That does clear that problem right up. So he was spot on that. So I want to pass that to you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fantastic advice from people who, went to the school of hard knocks.
That's so. Right. Those guys have been doing it since before it was cool, man. Yep. They've been doing it a long time.
Yep. I learned a lot of stuff just, you know, from shooting myself, but a lot of what I've learned in muzzleloading came from rendezvous and talking to people like that. So
yeah, finding a good mentor is always a good idea in life for a variety of things. This is no exception. I would say if you can find a guy who knows their stuff and can walk you through it and is willing to teach you on that, like that's a huge advantage in your corner.
Absolutely. The next classification, so we have granulation size. That's pretty simple. You have 1F, 2F, 3F, and 4F, and sometimes even finer. Usually you kind of have to...
There's 1.5. There's some weird stuff out there.
You have to search high and low, but those are like the main classifications. 1F and 4F are kind of the outliers. 1F is going to be like for cannons and stuff like that. You're not really going to use that in a muzzleloader. And then 4F is going to be like a pan primer for flintlocks.
Yeah.
So as far as what you're going to be using for propellant in muzzleloaders, you're going to be looking at the 2F and the 3F most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And differences between the two is basically the more Fs there are in the classification, the finer grain. So the way that I've heard Colton, one of our customer service guys, talk about is like fine or fine-fine or fine-fine-fine, you know, just like the more fines you have in there, the finer the granulation.
Super,
so.
Super fine. Fine-fine-fine-fine.
Fine-fine-fine-fine.
And you may see like a G at the end of it. So, you know, there's not really any rhyme or reason to that I've found. I've seen that on true black powder. I've seen that on substitutes. I've seen true black powder that doesn't have it. So, you know, it's just that's just part of the new, you know, the alpha. It's not even numeric.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you call that. Just the system that they use for defining that. So
totally.
But yeah, it's all the same powder. It's just ground up to different granule sizes.
Totally.
It's just, you know, more finely ground, which makes it more reactive, right? The more finely ground it is, the faster it's going to burn.
Yep.
When black powder already burns very fast. So generally, like your 3F is for pistols, 2F is generally for rifles, but there's some nuance there. A lot of the guns will have load recommendations. You can use both. And usually that 3F is just going to be a little less powder overall than the 2F recommendation. So just follow your safety manual. You'll be good.
Totally.
Yep.
Yep. Good advice. We also have loose and pelletized, which we already talked about pretty extensively. That's just another way of classifying powder. So the next one, so we have black. So should you choose black powder or black powder substitute? We already talked about that a good amount here.
Mm-hmm. And I think we kind of already talked about the main applications where you would want to do like true black powder.
Totally.
But we could kind of touch on it a little bit.
Yeah. I honestly, like what we said before, like if you're using a flintlock, highly recommend, you know, or anything that is going to not have a super hot ignition. Mm-hmm. You're probably going to be better off with true black powder. And if you're using something like if the 209 primer or a musket cap or, you know, even a number 11 in most instances, you're going to be just fine with black powder substitute. So, I don't think there's any need to beat a dead horse as far as that goes.
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty much it. So, and we've covered the granulation sizes, so we're good there. So,
And we already talked about loose or pellet. Man, we just
got it. We've already nailed all of that.
We already went through all this like hours ago.
We don't even need notes. Or maybe we do. It'd keep us on track here. We're all over the place. Exactly.
So sweet. We can close the book on part three. You guys should have a pretty healthy understanding, have all the knowledge to choose a powder. So now we're going to go on to part four, which is primers, percussion caps, and flash pans. And I've got a feeling, a sneaking suspicion, that we've already talked about a lot of this as well, but let's go ahead and go through it.
Yeah, we'll move pretty quickly through this so as not to take up too much of your time, but generally speaking, you know, there's different ignition systems on different guns, so obviously pay attention to which one you're buying. If you get a modern inline, you're either going to have a 209 ignition system most likely. You might have a large rifle primer ignition system. Or in the case of the Northwest guys, you'll have a musket cap ignition system.
Yep.
Get appropriate ignition sources for your rifle. Most everything out there, again, you know, we talked about those primers, 209 Magnum CCIs, 209A Federals, the Chedike Clarinox CX2000 Magnum primers are a good option as well for 209 guns. If you're using a large rifle primer guns, that's going to be primarily your Paramount guys or your Remington 700 guys who are repriming their casings.
They do make the conversion for the Acuras too.
They do. That's true. I forgot we had the Variflame ignition conversion for the Acuras. Now, if you're using any of the Variflame ignition systems or if you're using the Remington 700 ignition system, which is just their primed casing, you can reprime those. That's just a standard large rifle primer. So, easy peasy.
No Magnum.
Yep, don't use the Magnums. Neither one of them recommend that. Yep. You'd have to ask the manufacturers as to why. I don't know exactly, but I know we've used them a lot with the standard large rifle primers, and they work great. So, stick with that. If you're shooting flintlocks, use your 4F true black powder. If you're shooting a side lock, that's either going to be a number 11 or a musket cap ignition system. Number 11s work fine. Musket caps are a little hotter. So if you're having ignition issues, maybe upgrade that nipple. You can switch the nipple out from 11 to a musket cap. It's a little larger, and then you get a little hotter ignition for yourself.
One thing to keep in mind with musket caps is there are different variations. So musket caps specifically, you have some that are produced for like reenactors that they're not actually trying to
shoot a hunting load.
Yeah, they're not shooting a hunting load. So you want to make sure you're getting a hot musket cap. So like we mentioned earlier, the RWS are kind of the gold standard. The shoots and caps work good with CVAs, but
I don't think they're actually going to be manufactured anymore. Just a heads up on
the shoots and?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, never mind.
If you can find them, still you can use them. But it is my understanding that those are no longer going to be produced. So whatever's on the market now, once they're gone, I believe they're gone. If I'm wrong about that, we will update that in the comments. But that is the most current information I have. So.
Got it. Well, that's a bummer.
Yep.
But still, RWS are like the cream. That's what we all use here for our Oregon hunts. They work, I can't say flawlessly, but about as close to flawlessly as a musket cap can function. So.
Yeah, probably 85% to 90% ignition, you know, consistency, which is great. I know people are going to be like, well, there's a 10% chance it might not go off. Yeah, that's kind of part of muzzle loading sometimes.
90%
that's really
of the time,
frustrating.
It works every time.
But they are the best, and I rarely have failed ignition with those.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, they work really good. So, That's pretty much it. So basically, there's a couple troubleshooting notes, which we've already gone over. Make sure you're using the right primer powder combination, make sure you're using a, you know, if you're using Black Horn, make sure you're using a Magnum primer. Basically, if you use the stuff we've recommended, you shouldn't have any problems with that sort of deal. So,
and we've got all that laid out in these articles as well. So if you want some notes to go back and reference, you know, we've got those. And Darren, maybe we can just link those articles under the video for you guys to quickly be able to reference there.
Yeah, all the articles will be linked there. So another, the last little troubleshooting note that we haven't covered so far is ensure that your percussion caps are applied properly. So at the rendezvous this weekend, we had some trouble. You know, if you're, once your nipple gets fouled up and stuff, it can be difficult to apply. And it's difficult as it is sometimes to get the percussion cap properly applied to the nipple. So we recommend using a capper. That gives you the extra leverage you need to kind of force it on there. And then also just kind of make sure you... You'll be able to kind of get a feel for it once you've done it a few times. Like, okay, that's fully seated on there. Because if it's not, you're going to drop the hammer on your muzzleloader and it's not going, nothing's going to happen. You're not going to hear the primer go off or anything because what it did is it just finished seating it. And then if that happens, don't panic, just try again. And, you know, if it goes off, then you're good to go. But it's much better to just get it done right the first time so that when you have an animal in front of you, you're not like... panic and having a little freak out session because it's not, your gun's not going off.
Well, and you know, the nice thing is you don't typically run into that when you're hunting because you're usually starting with a pretty clean rifle out the gate. You know, rendezvous, that happens a lot more because you're shooting a ton.
Totally.
You know, you're not doing that when you're hunting. So, but yeah, just make sure you get that really good and cleaned up after you're done at the range, when you're done sighting in for the day and you're going to go hunt the next day, get that good and cleaned up. So that way you just don't have that issue.
Totally. So let's go ahead. We have on to our last section. We're talking about bullets. This one of the last two we've done is probably going to be a little bit more because we haven't covered this stuff quite as in depth. So we can talk about, we're going to talk about twist rates and stuff like that. So let's go ahead and get into that.
Okay. So we've got, the twist rates are kind of the main thing when you're considering what kind of bullet to utilize. Obviously there's caliber, but I figured that one's obvious enough. Don't buy the wrong caliber bullet. But, you know, for disclaimer, might as well just have that in there. If you're shooting a 50 cal, use a 50 cal.
Yep.
One thing that is kind of confusing for people is when it comes to, if you are going to shoot a Sabo round, oftentimes you'll see those advertised as a 50 cal Sabo and a 45 caliber bullet. That's normal. That's not a 45 caliber combo. That's to be shot out of a 50 cal. That means it's a 45 caliber diameter projectile. They're putting that in a plastic cup, which is going to fill up the rest of the space for the 50 cal. So that's how that works. But that's really the only part that's confusing. Everything else is pretty much specific to the bore. So twist rate's going to be your main thing. So we've got, and I think we've talked about this before at times, but this will just be a good refresher for everybody. So round ball, 160 twist rate or slower. If you don't know what that means, just a quick little crash course. So 1 in 60 just means that the projectile is rotating one full revolution over 60 inches of travel. So that's what that means. So whenever you hear 1 in 60, 132, 148, that's what that means. That's one spin for how many inches? So 1 in 60, so you want a really slow spin on a round ball. They don't stabilize well. If you spin them too fast, they're going to go flying off to the left, to the right, up, down. If you've shot any airsoft guns, you know what I'm talking about. You watch them go, ping, you know, that's kind of what they do. They do it faster, but that's kind of the same principle. If you're shooting kind of a more traditional conical style bullets, so that's going to be your maxi bullets, your mini ball, your maxi hunter style bullets, anything that's kind of a big slug looking projectile that's got a round nose on it and it's just kind of a big, you know, cylindrical slug that's just, just like a round ball, just got an elongated body on it, basically. Those are going to be good for like a 132 to 148. So they need a little faster spin because they actually can stabilize a little bit better, and they'll give you better accuracy because of that. But if you spin them too fast, you're still going to have the same problem. For sabotaged bullets, belted bullets, and full bore conicals, all of those, generally speaking, like a 1 in 28 or faster twist rate. So those are going to be most of your modern style projectiles. That's going to be your harvesters, your Hornady bullets, your power belt bullets. What else, Darren? There's a bunch of them out there.
There's a million.
Fury. There's, gosh, there's a ton of them. there's anyway, all the ones that
tons,
are, yeah, if they look like a really big version of a bullet you would put in a rifle cartridge, shoot it out of a fast twist rate. Yep. That's your rule of thumb there.
Totally. Yep.
So if they look like a modern style bullet, they need to be shot. They need to be spun quicker.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's pretty much just the twist rates. It's didn't take as long as I thought it was going to.
Guys, it's not super complicated. You know, just here's the basics, and you know, if you stick in those parameters, you're gonna be good.
Totally. Yeah, it's pretty simple. As far as your keys to success, so you want to make sure you're pairing your bullets with the right twist rates. That's number one. Additionally, you'll find a tighter fit is gonna perform better. So bullets like the power belts that are slightly undersized, you know, with a belted a design that are kind of meant to work really well in CVAs, which have a pretty tight bore diameter. You might find that in certain muzzleloaders, they don't perform quite as well because they have a looser bore diameter. So in those cases, you want to, you know, a perfect example of this is the Barnes Spitfires. They have two mm-hmm. different thicknesses of sabots.
Yeah.
Because the Remington 700 Ultimate muzzleloader has a much looser bore diameter. So they make a thicker version of that sabot to work in that muzzleloader, whereas the T-Easys, the thinner version, work better in some of the other guns. So just make sure you're getting one that fits appropriately in your bore.
On that note, so I get quite a few questions about, I used to anyway, get a few questions about how much force is appropriate when you're loading the bullet.
Mm-hmm.
So my rule of thumb is you should be able to properly load the bullet with one arm.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a disability or if you've got, you know, some sort of weakness for some reason, you know, obviously, you know, use discretion. But, you know, if you're generally speaking a healthy guy or gal, you should be able to load the bullet with one arm. It can be a little difficult. That's fine. But if you have to start really hammering on it, or if you're, you know, really reefing on it with a couple hands or jumping on it up and down, you know, that's too tight. You're probably not going to hurt the gun, but you're making your life miserable while you're trying to shoot it. So
if at any point you're hammering your ramrod against a tree,
I have talked to people who've done that.
Get some help. Yeah. Cause it's like, that's too tight.
That's too tight.
You know, you should not have to do that. It should be pretty like smooth, you know, getting down there. And as your barrel gets dirtier, it will get more tough.
Yep. So at some point you're going to need to clean.
Yep.
Right. Because if you're getting to the point where you have to start really reefing on it, or you're beating the ramrod down trying to get the bullet down the barrel, you need to clean your gun.
Something's wrong.
Yep.
Stop and figure it out. So next is make sure you're getting ones legal in your state. As we talked about, there's a whole bunch of regulations. If you have questions on bullet legality, listen to our bullet podcast that we did, or watch any of our videos that we've made on it.
Yeah, and we do have an article series on, I think, every state.
Yes.
Not all up to date. I apologize. I'm working through that.
It's a lot of work.
Your state fish and game departments don't get stuff out till late in the year. Tell them to put it out in the springtime, and we'll have it up to date.
Yeah, and a lot of those websites are just a bear to navigate, too. And just
they are. Well, that's why we try to kind of parse through that and get you all the highlights. But you still want to check your game manual just to be, you know, all the way up to date on stuff, because stuff changes last minute too. I know New Mexico will be sending out an email, and I think I don't know if I've done an article on it yet. I probably will be soon if I haven't. You know, they're not allowing scopes this year, so that's a new change that's caught a lot of people off guard. So there's just stuff changes quickly, unfortunately.
Yeah. The last and final point of this podcast is, and perhaps just a good summary for everything, and a good thing to just keep in mind in life. Just be open-minded and follow the accuracy. You know, follow the data, follow the details that you're finding. If you're using a bullet and you're just trying to make a square peg fit in a round hole, just get a different bullet. You know, be open to, you know, and if you're new, try a few different varieties. You know, buy one pack of three or four different bullets, see which ones shoot the best, you know, and just don't get so pigeonholed into like, this is the bullet I want to use, that you're neglecting, you know, this other bullet that's shooting, you know, just tack driving out of your muzzleloader. So,
And I would add on to that and just say, just because something works good for your buddy doesn't mean it's going to work good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Every gun is a little bit different.
Yes.
You guys could have the same exact rifles and it's not going to perform the same way.
Yes.
It's a weird thing, but they're all just slightly different. And that's just part of the process of how those guns are made. And so you're definitely, you know, you're going to be better off if you just kind of take a deep breath and just kind of roll with stuff as it comes. And, you know, it's like, hey, well, you know, my buddy said this is the best thing to use. It's like, well, if that's not giving you the accuracy you need, then, you know, be flexible and try something different. The good news is most of these bullets all perform really well on game. And if there's one that you don't like how it's performing on target, you know, there's a lot of good options out there. So try different things out. Don't, like Darren said, don't pigeonhole yourself into this is what, you know, I have to use because this is what you were told. There's lots of good options. And if you need help, we're always here for you. So that's always a good fallback.
Well said. Well said. Well, I think it's about time that we close the book on this podcast. It might be one for the record books as far as length goes. So
if you stuck with us this far, we appreciate you. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. Hopefully you're able to, you know, pick out some interesting stuff amidst all of our incoherent ramblings. And
that was more coherent than the last podcast you and I did.
That's true.
Although that last one was a lot of fun.
Yeah. If you don't want something serious at all and you just want to have fun, go listen to our Muzzleloaders Extravaganza podcast.
Oh, yeah. It's probably useless, but it's sure entertaining.
Yep. Exactly. So if there's anything that you'd like us to talk about on the show, let us know in the comments below. And be sure to leave us a review, especially on iTunes, but Spotify as well. And wherever you listen to podcasts, because it really helps out the show. And if you know somebody who is wanting to get into muzzle loading but doesn't know where to start, share this podcast with them. Help them, point them in the right direction, and give them our phone number, because we would love to talk with them and you know, help build the muzzle loader community. So thank you so much for taking the time to listen to us today, and we'll see you all on the next episode.